Hey, all, welcome in to Objectively Good Takes. I'm Dan, and I'm joined with my friend Hippo. And we are here to look over week two and look forward to week three. But a lot of this review, we had a good amount of highs and lows, and a lot of our takes from last week were ridiculous. All these games came down to one score, like 6 points, I think, was most of the margins, other than a couple games here. And we didn't hit as well as we did on week one, but that's fine. Can't win them. All right, so let's get into it. And cool. Just to remind everyone, the format that we do on this show is we're going to go over three highs each, three lows each that we saw throughout the Sunday slate and the Monday game. And we can even touch on the Thursday game as well, because we didn't really do a deep recap on it. And then we're going to spotlight tape. So we both went to one game in particular that we wanted to give a little bit more of a notice on and understand a little bit better. And then we're going to talk into some under the radar or players of interest that we want to highlight in particular. And then we'll do a little bit of Thursday intro and overview for the game coming up. And that'll do it for the podcast. So we'll start off at the top here with our three highs. Hippo, give me your first high out of this slate.
First high. We talked about the Bills game on last podcast and how they came away with a big victory, and how we were talking about Josh Allen, his MVP odds. They've gone up. They started the season at plus 900. They're at plus 450 because everything we said could happen to make Josh Allen an MVP favorite is happening as we speak. Them going down to Miami, continuing their dominance and taking care of a Miami team when they are pretty beat up on the defensive side of the ball and kind of impose their will by running the football as well as they did, and James Cook just being utilized passing game and the running game. He's become their number one weapon on offense, sort of say. Stephon Diggs was replaced by James Cook, and the offense philosophy just switched it up. That is the answer to your offseason problems and questions. Yeah, just the Bills have been interesting so far. Who do they play in week three? Because I'm interested to see them play a little bit tougher of a team. I think they play the Jaguars on Monday Night Football. My big brain is moving. I think the Jaguars will win that game, but that's for a later date. At a later date, Dan.
Yeah, that's a hot take.
Yeah, the Bills have started off the season 2-0, and they're crushing all doubters, even though I'm still doubting them. Go on, Dan. What's your first high of the week?
My first high of the week is a team that is underrated, and we talked about in the offseason, and I highlighted in particular in the offseason as my divisional winner, came into not a hostile environment, but not an environment that is the most inviting, and won the road game. This is the Bucks over the Lions, and I was thrilled that they played up to the caliber that they did. There's some question marks. There's some real question marks there that they need to really sort out before they go into their next game, or even like going down the road. In particular, the Aiden Hutchinson beating tackles like it was his job for sacks was something that's just, that can't happen. Yeah, he had 5 sacks. He almost had the record. 5.5 was the record. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was not thrilled about that, but the team stuck around and they played to the level of the Lions in a very competitive game. And Chris Godwin had a heater of a game. There was multiple times where I think there was 2 back-to-back plays in the second, if I'm not mistaken, where he got hit in the out route, like running across the field in the crosser, and Baker just nailed him each time. And it was just great grabs. He had CBs draped all over him. It didn't matter. And I was really impressed with that because I know he was an afterthought in both fantasy drafts and in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were highlighting Mike Evans on this team, but no one really else was getting that kind of love. So it's great to see that Godwin's getting incorporated in that. When they play opponents that maybe treat them as a contending team, it may be a little different. They have a lot of injuries on their defense as well. I know that they were walking into this game with a couple, but now Jordan Whitehand and Vita Veda both like potentially out and for unspecified amount of time isn't great. Rashad White didn't do an amazing job with the amount of carries he had, but Bucky Irving looked okay with his. So I think Bucky takes that job sooner rather than later. But regardless, Bucks pulled it out. Very happy with that. And I hope to see him next week.
The Bucks have been adopting the personality of their quarterback in the team. Very scrappy, and they will never die, just like Baker in his NFL career so far. Rashad White picked up the hamstring injury in the game. My least favorite running back in the NFL. There you go. Rashad White, come on down.
Hippo, give me your
high of the week. We're going to the desert, the Arizona Cardinals. We were talking about NFL Blitz and how you can beat the shit out of people. Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals beat the shit out of the Los Angeles Rams and injured all their players. All the Rams are gone now. Kyren Williams will be hurt this time next week to put the trifecta on their three stars that we all were beloved in fantasy football. Matt Stafford will retire at the end of the year, and Sean McVay will take a media job. Now, the Cardinals just imposed their will. Marvin Harrison was introduced to the NFL, baptized, say, two amazing plays. Probably had a few more, but two amazing touchdowns. James Conner ran the ball all game, as predicted here. This is one of the few games we got right here predicting, but we thought it would be a lot closer than this. Yeah, I think the most impressive part for me wasn't the 40 points that the Cardinals put up, even though it's quite impressive, but I wasn't very high on the Rams' defense. I want to say the Cardinals' defense only allowing 10 points, even though it's the walking wounded over in Los Angeles, still with Sean McVay. You think he'd script up something, get some points, and make it respectable? The Cardinals don't really have too much success against McVay since his tenure started there. I wasn't very high on the Rams to begin with. I think they finished dead last now, but the Cardinals competing with San Francisco, and when they play, I'm going to be intrigued because San Fran took a step back this week. I still really San Fran, but my Arizona Cardinals are sneaky. They're getting sneaky, and Kyler Murray might be the best quarterback in football through 2 weeks, Dan. He's up there.
He is up there. Some of his, not scrambling per se, but like when he's out of pocket, throws like that touchdown, the long ball to Marvin was insane play, and he had the arm strength to back it up. So it's not as hot of a take, but he's definitely putting it on. He's putting on a clinic. First 2 weeks, really good.
I think we're just in the midst of a Kyler Murray career year. And if you want to go look at some MVP odds, because I really do think he's the best. I think he's put on the best showing these first 2 weeks out of all the quarterbacks. Derek Carr's up there too, and so is Baker. Team you just pointed out. Kyler's going to have those moments with Marvin where he has his rushing and scrambling put on display.
He's in the most competitive division, theoretically. So great to see it. All right. My second high comes from a rookie that was drafted highly to an offense that everyone doesn't love, but had an official coming out party. And we loved the fact that he turned the tables on what theoretically is a really bad defense that we think at least. And that's Malik Nabers, 10 for 127 and a touch. He owned that game. That was his game. No one else had anything on him. Daniel Jones fed him early and often. Even within the first half of the game, it was just a constant barrage of targets. And we don't know, because we talked about this last week, the Washington secondary could be literally the worst secondary in football. So it could be a combination of the fact that their starters are not to the degree that they need to be in order to compete in this league, or Malik Nabers is really good. I'm going to go with a combination of both, but I'm so happy that he decided to turn it on. And it's just, oh yeah, the entire offense was focused through him. Out of the 16, count them, 16 completions that Daniel Jones had on Sunday, 10 of them went to him. That is crazy numbers. That is
great.
It's not sustainable, but it's insane. Yeah,
it might be.
I imagine that teams are going to now do double coverage looks. They're just going to put two people on Nabers and force him to throw.
Nabers really does great out of the slot. Daboll loves his slot guys. He tried to draft Jalin Hyatt last year to be that slot guy, but it didn't work out because he doesn't have all the tools that Nabers does, especially his size. They both are really fast, but Nabers just has that size to go with it. I think he might be able to draw up some plays where he can avoid some double coverages, especially in the slot there, Dan. No, I love Neighbors for the whole year, and it's just his target percentage is just going to be so high. And I think the second highest guy was Wandale, and he had two catches on the dice.
It was Darius Slayton with three. Yeah.
Oh, Daniel Jones, how long will you last?
I hope not any more than the season. I'm hoping it's done after all this. Fair.
All right, my last tie of the week. Going into fantasy seasons, the third round and the fifth round are big for me. And in the third round, you can usually get that first, not first round talent, but a top 12 guy, a wide receiver one, running back one, that falls a little bit because there's not too much hype around them. You'd always try and target that guy all off season. I was thinking it was DJ Moore or this guy, and I drafted DJ Moore in a lot, and the rookie quarterback's struggling so far, but that's to be expected. I just, as the season goes on, he's going to get better. So will DJ, which is where I'm putting my Easter eggs. But this other guy, Nico Collins, has CJ Stroud, who's not a rookie quarterback anymore, Dan. He's in a second season, his sophomore season. He's looking just as good as his rookie season. Probably should have taken that into account because Nico Collins is a bona fide wide receiver one, and he's hitting the lottery for all those people who took him in the third round, maybe even fourth round, because he's not that sexy name that everybody wanted. But he's the number one option on this team. Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs are going to be the ones that are more volatile, go up and down as the weeks go on. Nico Collins is just CJ Stroud's favorite guy to go to when he's in pressure situation or when he just wants to go deep or when he's in the red zone. Nico Collins had a great game against Chicago. It was pretty much the only thing that was working for the Texans, especially once Joe Mixon went down with that hip drop tackle that wasn't called. One of the many hip drop tackles that weren't called, unfortunately. Nico Collins, on his touchdown, he was just a man amongst boys. And Chicago's corners aren't no joke, but he put over 100 yards on them. So it's time, if you aren't taking Nico Collins seriously, it's time to take him seriously. And he's not going to be the wide receiver one, but he has an outside chance of being the wide receiver one because he's locked in as a top 10 receiver right now, Dan. What says you?
Completely agree. No, he's locked in. He looks like a monster. He was getting targets, meeting contact, going through contact. One of those touchdowns was like, yeah, I'm going to go through the cornerback and the over-the-top coverage on the safety, and I'm still going to get this touchdown. He's playing at a degree that he's playing like you saw Ja'Marr Chase at rookie year play. You're like, oh, yeah, that's the fundamental foundation for this offense. That guy needs the ball. And it's great to see that we are already getting that, like, understanding that this is how all of them are going to play out. It's unfortunate that Tank Dell isn't getting incorporated as much as we hoped because he's got that spark.
No, Tank will still get his. He's a big play guy. They'll get him incorporated. It's just Nico has the tangibles of just a wide receiver when he's 6'4", 225, 230. He's a huge mamma jamma, and he's bringing the hurt, and then he's breaking out before our eyes. So it's great to see. It's great to see, Dan.
Love to see it. Yep. That is absolutely the best. All right. My last tie of the week was an upset that we didn't entirely expect. We actually played it the opposite direction. And I want to highlight the side of the ball that actually, I think, really led to them doing well. And it's because of the coverages that were being called. It was because of the blitz packages. It was because of this level of detail. And I was listening to, not Nate Tice, the Athletic podcast, and they were going into this in some detail, and I forget the host's name off the top of my head, and I apologize, but they were talking about this and really made me reconsider how defenses are both progressing and what they can call as in coverages, because the players are getting more acclimated to having to deal with a lot of sneaking looks, a lot of we're sitting in two and then we're going into three, but we're dropping it in a weird way and we're moving things around. And so this is all preamble for the Vikings upsetting the 49ers and the defensive showing of the Vikings doing a remarkable job. There's only four sacks on the day, but because of the defensive calls, they made Purdy have to really think about what exactly he's throwing. And Purdy reads coverages pretty well, and he's gotten a lot of accolades about that. But it was telling where It was recorded that Purdy went up to, why am I blanking on the defensive coordinator's name?
Brian Flores, who's getting last laugh as we speak over Tua.
Yes, exactly.
Who's the asshole now?
So Flores, he goes to Flores after the game, and he literally says those coverages or those calls or those schemes were crazy. And this is coming from an individual who is decent, we think, at reading those types of coverages. And so the scheme that he put together to go against the 49ers was something maybe not new per se, but it's definitely an evolved grouping. So I'm really impressed by the Vikings defense to do this to what we think is a reputable team and to do it so handily. I know they only won by 6, but the fact that they won it all is the impressive thing, especially with Sam Darnold at QB, which is, he's also doing a bang up job, and we didn't expect that.
Got out of the clutches of Carolina, got reformed by Shanahan, now he's on his way. I think on one of the late offseason signs, pretty much in training camp, of Stephon Gilmore going to Minnesota really helps that front 7. They lost Danielle Hunter, but they still are pretty impressive. But the late training camp signings between the Vikings getting Stephon Gilmore and the Vikings just as an overall defense, and then the Tennessee Titans acquiring Ernest Jones from the Rams and then signing a few guys in their secondary as well. I think they're two of the more impressive defenses so far. We just weren't expecting this level of play. I think both of them are nearing the top 12 defenses in the league, but it's still early. I just don't want to overreact to 2 games so far, but both of them have been quite impressive. And Tennessee is more the second round rookie out of Texas, Tavondre Sweat, who has just been barnstorming the NFL and destroying offensive lines. He did it a lot in college. I just didn't expect he's outperforming Jeffrey Simmons at this point, which is really impressive. But this isn't about the Titans. This is about the Vikings, Dan. And Ivan Pace also just taking that next step as a full-time linebacker. He's been highlighted by your man, Brett Coleman, who's done a lot of dive tapes on him. That he really put me on to Ivan Pace. I didn't really know Ivan Pace's game until he put me on to him. And he's just one of those undersized linebackers that sideline to sideline really gets involved, can do a little bit of everything. So you get the young blood mixed with the veterans, Harrison Smith and Stephon Gilmore, like I was saying, and it's a fun defense to watch. It's a fun team. Nobody was expecting 2-0 out of the Vikings, and here they are.
Yeah, and I'd love to see it. You know, love competitive football. You know, if teams are good, everyone prospers.
Absolutely, Dan.
All right, and on that note, we have to go to the opposite end of things. These are our 3 lows. We have 3 lows each of this Sunday, of the entire week, of week 2. I'll get us started here with the one that you've been calling, and we've been texting about this quite a bit, and you have a real stance on this quarterback. And I, last year, was so into it. I thought he was incredible for the small period of time that we had him, but it's really telling that he still only has played now 19 games. And so this is Anthony Richardson. And him going to Green Bay and just looking bewildered by coverages, and then also just not doing the thing that we expect him to do behind an offensive line that's theoretically one of the better units in the league, and him not scrambling, not creating leverage with his feet, but also not doing the throws that we saw in week 1. They essentially put the cap on all that, put the kibosh on it. And it just wasn't a good day at all. And I know your take is that he innately isn't at the spot that he could be. And I heard an interesting take about him that this is essentially like Josh Allen coming out, like his rookie year, where both of us were like, this guy cannot compete in the NFL. Look at the inaccuracy issues. He's completing like 3 balls. Mm-hmm. And so far, AR is in the same boat of inaccuracy issues. His completions are like really not good, but he has the absolute athleticism. I put him against anyone in the league for an athletic human and just be able to put him toe-to-toe. But right now, doesn't look that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Shane Steichen can't really help you, it's not good. He's an inaccurate quarterback. When he was at Florida, we all loved watching him at Florida playing the college game because college is a little bit different than the pros. And we all knew once he gets to the pros, he's going to suck. But we're all like, we really like watching him play because he's really, he's just a fun athlete. I don't want to say he's in the same ilk as Tim Tebow because he's a little bit different than Tebow. And he's a little bit worse than Cam Newton. But just mentioning him with two of the better athletes of the 2010s is something to tip your hat about. I just don't see it with Anthony Richardson panning out here. He doesn't have the accuracies. He doesn't have the wherewithal to not take a big hit. So injuries and not being able to quarterback a team, those are two things against him. Could he be Josh Allen and put it all together? I don't know. My first one, I went into a deep dive here. This was one of my spotlight tape games as well. I looked into two games this week. I looked at one of the best teams of the week and one of the worst teams that's been spotlighting the whole nation here, especially since a few days later he was benched. It's Bryce Young and these Carolina Panthers. And I was like, why do they suck so much? What is going on, Carolina? I have not watched Carolina Panthers game since Bryce Young went on there, and I will not be watching Carolina Panthers game after this because it was a tough watch. And I am here to give a stance, Dan. And my stance is Bryce Young has been scapegoated. This is a sham job on Bryce Young, and it's one of the bigger ones that has been happening. It is a sham nonetheless. This man was set up not to succeed at all. The Chargers play a weird defense where they extend their ends out, and I don't want to get into technical terms too much. They're like seven eyes. So the ends don't set up one hole away. They set up one and a half holes away, which really puts you at a disadvantage, especially when you're at shotgun and you're probably 5'8". They did make a switch, though. After halftime, they went under shotgun, but it took them until halftime. They were down like 20 points at that point, 17. So they did make that adjustment. But yeah, the whole entire passing game plan, two-yard comebackers on the inside with four-yard comebackers on the outside. Everything was just so minimalistic. They would run the football decently sometimes. Chuba Hubbard missed a decent amount of holes, but he doesn't have a running game. His offensive line can't really protect him. He doesn't really have well-known receivers. And there's Mel Kiper was making a pretty good point. And I also want to say this is his, what, third offense he's had to learn in 18 games, three offenses in 18 games, because you get rid of Frank Reich last year after six games, bring in another guy, and then you bring in a whole new coach. But Mel Kiper was saying, you bring in a new coach, a new offense, and the kid had one of the worst rookie years of any first-round pick. He was just on bust trajectory here. And you have three preseason games to play, and you play the kid one series of a preseason game, and he looked pretty damn good in the one series. Why don't you let him play, especially if you're going to bench him after the second game? How do you not play him a full game in the preseason? You let Jack Plummer play the whole third preseason game, the whole second preseason game, except one series. And Jack Plummer, guess what? He was cut. How stupid can you be not to give this kid to even develop, learn the offense? And then the most frustrating part was halfway through the game, you could see he was getting shell-shocked where he was seeing ghosts then. And that's what really gets to me is you didn't protect this kid. You didn't give him a game plan to succeed. And now he's lost his confidence. There's one play where he had the tight end come back on a curl route. He was open, but there was a guy streaking down the seam. And if he waited two more seconds, he would have been able to hit that. And he had the protection, but he couldn't trust his offensive line enough to wait the extra 2 seconds. When he first saw the open man on that first read, he just took it. Why? That's why everything is, when you look at his air yards, are probably like it's 8 yards, it's 10 yards. There's no big plays because he can't trust his line to actually have a play develop. And half of the plays are just these four-yard passing plays, which is just so infuriating to me. This is long-winded, but I had to, because Bryce Young, his mechanics and everything are fine, and there are people who are getting after him for jumping on some pass plays to get over. They're like, oh, he has to jump. And it's like, now it's so ludicrous to me, because how many times do we see normal-sized guys get the ball batted down? Like, he's making a play where he's jumping and actually evading the guy, putting his hands up, and he's getting the ball to the flats and actually completing it. And people are just harping on the smallest things to make Bryce Young look even worse than he is. This is just a disservice. Bryce Young has been mistreated, miscoached, and the Carolina Panthers are a terrible organization right now. And I'm leaving it at that. I'm done, Dan.
Tirade over. I liked it, though. And especially because there's so many haters of Bryce Young, it's great to hear a contrarian there be like, no, you know what? No, this was set up to fail. And that's not fair to anyone. And also, yeah, I saw it like Tepper was on the field today. It's like, what kind of asinine shit is this? I bet Canales did not want to seat him either. I bet you're not going to win the division. You're not going to do well overall. The team isn't built for that. You need at least like 2 to 3 years in order to get that team developed. You have your top like athlete in Derek Brown on IR. Be realistic and know that you might as well go and develop the guy, get the offense humming by some point and get through that. And then next year have something that's actually stable for the kid rather than that dude is just atrocious as an owner. I can't believe he's just doing a Dan Snyder 2.0 here.
Oh, I know, you get rid of a Dan Snyder and one comes right in. And the thing is, it's going to go down as the worst trade probably ever with the Bears and all the capital they give up. And it's like you give all that capital up, you acquire this kid, and then you treat the asset so poorly. It's like you pooped on it, you peed on it, you kicked it outside and let it like be homeless for a few weeks. It's like, what are you doing? You should have sat him last week. You should have developed a running game. You should have developed an offensive line before you let this kid come in. You had Andy Dalton all last season. Like Andy Dalton should have been playing last year like the Patriots are doing with Jacoby Brissett. Even this year, you draft a running back, but it's the one running back who can't play right away because Jonathan Brooks is coming off of an ACL and he's not going to be playing for 6 weeks. Go on, Dan. What's your one? Panthers stink.
Yeah, Panthers stink. The organization is really bad. All right, I'll move on to my number two low.
And I bet that's why Baker Mayfield wanted to stay in the Bucs. He could have got more money somewhere, but he wanted to stick it to the Panthers.
Oh, I love that Baker's doing well. It's like real middle finger to the Panthers. Yeah, no, it wasn't me. It was you. I love that's how you win. That's how you really win deep down. And like Sam Darnold, too, even more hilarious, doing really well, had to get developed further by a competent coaching staff with a good organization. And he's now doing well. So, yeah, I think I love the hot take of like trade Bryce Young to be Tua's backup. I think that would have been a great take. Let McDonald do some damage when it comes to you know, really developing him. But, all right. My number two is a game that was played in the rain where the podium after the game, the QB quite literally said, "We stink right now." And that is Trevor Lawrence and the Jags. And they played a game. Again, it was a rain game. So I'll give them a little bit of credit on there. And so it did actually rain. That was my sleuthing last week. I talked about that. They did not play well. I watched most of this game. They incorporate Christian Kirk and most of their things. Brian Thomas had a few grabs, so it wasn't particularly good. Their run game was pretty much stifled. And again, it's the Cleveland defense, which are very good. Their back end still played really well. But the fact is that nothing offensively went well against you. You were trying to boat race first to 20, a team that just doesn't even have an offensive unit put together. And I don't get it. I think the Jags need to turn something around. In between the head coach not being enthusiastic about anything, because all the post interviews is him basically checked out and not trying to interact or say that we'll get there or this is part of the progress. I think, unfortunately, for like in contrast between the Panthers and the Jags, is we believe the Jags should be a competent offense. Our expectations are they actually do function properly. We don't have the same thing with the Panthers. And so when we look at the Jags and they just are incompetent over and over again, and they lose games close, but they like, there were like, if you watch the tape, it wasn't fun to watch. It was a very piss poor showing. You're like, why is this the way it is? Like, Doug Peterson, tell me, why is this the way it is? And I'm disheartened that the Jags are doing this way, especially because I, like you, thought they were going to be a much better team than they are. They're not playing up to their talent whatsoever.
So I don't know if Kevin Stefanski listened to our last episode, but I think last week I was saying how Watson's mechanics were all crap, and I don't know what Stefanski's been looking at. So Stefanski didn't work with Watson until after he watched the week one tape and you really fixed up some things. So I'm glad that you started coaching after the first week of the season, Kevin Stefanski. Welcome to 2024. Yeah, the Jags, Evan Engram gets hurt preseason. I get cold feet. I pull away. I don't actually bet on the game, but I wanted to bet on the game, and I wanted to bet on the Jaguars because I thought the Browns were quitters. The Browns are not quitters. They just hadn't looked at any tape or played any football yet, and week one was the preseason of week one. And they're going to be one of those Jekyll and Hyde teams, I think, now, because their defense is elite. It's still elite. It's not like the Jets where it's going to drop off this year. It's still one of the best defenses in the whole entire league, and that's really hard to face in the rain. So I'm hoping to give the Jaguars the benefit of the doubt, but I don't know if that Miami game, them blowing it week one, was their first nail in their coffin coming off of where they were 9-3 last year, choked away the rest of the season, missed the playoffs, and then you start off that week one, but fumbling the ball at the goal line, Travis Etienne, and fumbling the season away. I'm getting a feeling them with Philadelphia now, where the coaching might not be suited for the team, and they might need a change. Both they need a change, like a change of scenery here. And this is a pride game this week, Monday Night Football at Buffalo. I think if the Jags lose this game, Doug Peterson might be looking for a new job because they are too good of a team to have this happen. And I really think they're going to beat the Bills. I don't know. It's in my cojones. Gabe Davis is going back to Buffalo. He's got some revenge. They didn't even give him a contract offer. There are some holes in that Bills defense that we've been waiting for somebody to capitalize on. Etienne and that offensive line. Mitch Morse is coming back to Buffalo too. They got rid of their center. He's coming back home. I don't know. There's just, if the Jags have any pride, this is a pride spot. Week three, when you're 0-2 teams and you need to fight and get a W because they're paid professionals too, they need to go up to Buffalo, beat a 2-0 team, and then you get the season back on track.
All right, so for that game, if you had to, don't look it up, if you had to set a line on that game, what's your line on that game?
Bills are at home, so that's 3 right off the bat. How much better of a team are they on top of the home field 3? I'd probably say it's Bills -4.5. What is it? Do you have it?
No, I don't have it. I don't want to look it up. I want you to just make a guess. We'll look up later. I think it's going to be a 6.5.
6.5. We're looking it up right now, Dan. Real time. Oh, my internet's going to be very slow.
I'll do it.
Now we're creeping to the finish line. Okay, you might have to do it. Oh, it's 5.5. We're in the middle.
I got it at 5 on DraftKings.
Oh, 5? All right. My 4.5 was closer then. I beat you there.
All right. You win. You win there. But
no, I was totally off on this Browns-Jaguars game, so I don't win.
My actual immediate reaction, you want to know what my immediate reaction is?
What?
I felt +11 on the Jags after watching that tape. I was like, oh no, they do not deserve to win. Lovely thing about the NFL, and it was really, this is more of like a showing off everything. And I kept thinking this all day on Sunday. I'm like, the parody of the NFL is showing. Mm-hmm. Turns out every team is staffed with freaks of nature, and mm-hmm. they're all playing at an extremely high level. And the winning is coming in the details. It's coming in the finest of margins. Mm-hmm. So the parody of the NFL is that at any given Sunday, any given team can beat another team. And that's just how it goes. And it really showed this past week where we had upsets all over the place.
Absolutely, Dan. It's the greatest thing in sports. The worst team in baseball is still going to win 68 games or something like that. They can beat the best team in baseball. The NBA is a little bit different. The worst team in basketball really sucks.
All right, give me your number 2.
All right, my number 2, it was the Rams injuries, which I already touched on. Their offensive line's in the shitter. Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua are in the shitter. Defense is still hanging on a little bit. The Rams are just, they're really hampered by injuries. I think we saw this same scenario 2 years ago, and it goes into their draft style. They love to draft guys that are damaged goods and get them at a value getting Puka Nacua in the fifth round, or was he fifth or sixth round? Getting him in the late rounds, not spending high capital, using the first rounders usually to trade for superstars and stuff, like you're playing Madden with your friends or anything like that. But yeah, it's starting to turn on the Rams, where they get the, it's boom or bust with the way the roster is constructed. Is you get all these guys to stay healthy and you boom on their talent because they're really talented guys, or they get injured. And yeah, probability wise, they're just going to be getting injured. But instead of just harping on the Rams and them finishing last place in this division, I'm going to go and highlight something else, Dan. I think we've probably all seen on the internet and Twitter how the passing is down in the NFL and how passing TDs are like in the 60s and they've been in the hundreds years past. I want to highlight the revitalization of the running game, because I was looking at my star player of the game, basically, but I'm hippo ball, so I give out balls of the game. And look at all these running backs that are on here. It is a run-centric league now, and the running backs have been dominating football. I mean, we go to the Bills, James Cook with his 3 touchdowns. We get to Alvin Kamara, his 4 touchdowns. Brian Robinson had over 130 yards. J.K. Dobbins, over 130 yards, 2 weeks in a row here. Him and Gus Edwards both had 17 carries. Josh Jacobs, 150 yards with the quarterback hurt. Breece Hall combining for 120 yards in the touchdown, that great TD catch. Joe Mixon in the first game before he gets hurt for the Texans, he carried the Texans. It's Saquon in the first week at 3 touchdowns. It's just, it's been crazy production from the running back, a position that has been so undervalued in recent years and really have been bent over with the contracts and the owners and GMs trying to find a loophole in paying guys for their offenses. The running back position is back. Hopefully it stays back. Teams are loving to play cover two highs, and that's really, you just have to run the football at them, and that's really been the stake here. But I really am happy to see that the running game is back, because I am a running back connoisseur and I love to see it, Dan. So instead of harping on the Rams, I will be highlighting the running backs in the running game coming back to the NFL.
So do you just think that's like a one-to-one from the idea that Tampa 2 is just being played constantly? You think that's just like the answer is, oh yeah, no, we're just going to run the ball because that's what we're supposed to do in this coverage?
Yeah, that and a lot of teams roster construction-wise have gone to a base nickel. So they're just stocking up on cornerbacks and they're fading away from the linebackers, so to say. A lot of these linebackers, if you look, they only have 2 starting linebackers. And I think that's going to start to bite a lot of teams in the butt, because they're not going to be able to stop the run. And a lot of teams are starting to love running the football. The teams that are going to win it all, the teams that are going to be able to deploy like 3-4 linebackers and have that really good defensive lineman that can disrupt the game. Because defensive linemen and running backs are the MVPs of the NFL to start off this year. So there's my take.
A good take. It feels like it's actually real. It seems like that's exactly what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Those big boys up front and those running backs. Love it. Love to see some old school football. Bring Harbaugh back and this is what happens to the NFL.
Oh, man. Is it a 1-to-1 ratio? You bring Harbaugh back and everyone's running the ball.
Harbaugh was at Indianapolis during the combine. You haven't been running the damn ball since I've been at Michigan.
Let me teach you a thing about giving running backs 34 carries in a game.
Dan.
That's pretty funny. All right, I have to prove that point by bringing up a running back that has unimpressed in 2 weeks. And that's Javonte.
More on that team, Dan.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the full, like, I'm going to give in the same way that you were just talking about Bryce Young, and we should give rookies who have to step into a big role time to progress. I'm going to do the same thing. So I'm not going to completely poo-poo the Broncos in their entirety, but I'm going to throw a little bit of shade on Javonte Williams and him not being able to do anything in the last 2 weeks is surprising. He was decently involved in the receiving game, but that's just because Bo Nix doesn't know how to throw down the field quite yet. And so he'll do the checkdowns and he'll do their screens, and the average up a target is going to be 5 yards for a little while. But the fact is that he still ran 11 times for 17 total yards. And anyone who sees that stat line isn't
that's not a high-end RB. I liked him coming out, and pre-injury, he was, like, high on my tier list. Post-injury, we're a year out from it. Usually we see ACLs get back to more normalcy by this point, and it just isn't the case. I'm disheartened that Javonte is starting out in such a low way.
Yeah, Javonte, when he came out, I like Javonte too. I don't want to kill him, but I might kill him. Javonte coming out was really good, but the great thing about Javonte Williams when he's coming out was his breaking tackle ability, and he was just so good at breaking tackles, and that usually comes from keeping your legs going and just pushing through the guy, which is a lot of legs. He tore up his knee pretty good. I think it was ACL and additional ligament. I don't know if it was ACL and meniscus, but it was something unorthodox where it wasn't just a plain ACL. So it was a little bit... I think it was
PCL as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so ACL and the PCL, which that makes sense because they overlap each other. I don't think Javonte Williams is going to come back. He's also in a disserviceable situation. Bo Nix shouldn't have been drafted in the first round. Sean Payton drafted him in the first round, tried to save his job for having a rookie quarterback around for 5 years. Sean Payton's offense isn't working. I haven't watched too much Broncos tape, so I can't tell about the offensive line if they're opening up the holes. But if Javonte doesn't have his breaking tackle ability, he's not one of those guys with top-end speed, and he's not one of those outside runners, so to say. So if he doesn't have that fully recovered from his knee, it's just something that I don't think he's ever going to regain, and he's going to, unfortunately, become a plotter, which... looking at his stat lines, he's becoming slowly, and it's sad to see. So I think more bad days are coming for Javonte, which is sad because I loved him coming out of UNC just like you did. But that knee injury and him not being able to break tackles is just too much for him to overcome, I think. So it's time to set him to sea.
All right. Give me your last one.
Setting things to see. Some things you set to see Viking funeral style. We light it and we give it respect. Some things you set to see and you let a killer whale just devour it and you go, ooh and ah, because Shamu did good. Nick Sirianni, Philadelphia. I don't know how many more games you can squander for Philadelphia before you get murdered, Sirianni. This could be for your own good health. An Italian man in Philadelphia is supposed to bring honor and pride. An Italian man is not supposed to throw away games on Monday Night Football while everybody's watching. Sirianni, he looks like a, and he sounds like a, so he might be a, there'll be a lot of bleeps, bleep, bleeps in there. I might as well say it. He sounds like a prick, he's a prick. And when you're coaching grown men that are the best at their profession, being a prick's not a way to get their attention and respect. Him bringing in Fangio and Kellen Moore was him saving his job, but he just thinks he's smarter than everybody. He just tries to outwit people, trying to be like, look what I can do. He thinks he's better than you. I get the heebie-jeebies when Nick Sirianni is on my television screen. Jalen Hurts doesn't like the guy. It's clear as day. I just think it's his time to go midseason right here, and the Eagles will turn it around. I don't want to make too much out of it because they probably still should have won the game. They didn't even have AJ Brown, their best player, and Saquon is to blame, but time and time again they got down to the I'll just rewind it a little bit back. You go down the field on the first drive with Saquon was killing them on runs and runs. They get probably to the 30-yard line. Saquon needs to take a breather, put in Gainwell doesn't do as well because he's not Saquon, but he still is picking up like 4 yards. It gets to 3rd and 4, the first of many 3rd and 4s that the Eagles face inside the red zone. The Eagles pass it once, 4th down, they pass it twice, 2 4th downs, they don't get it, and it's a turnover on downs. Why don't you run the ball with Saquon, not once, but twice, and then you have Jalen Hurts if you even get it to 1 yard in the push that nobody gets. He did that at the end of the game as well, when it was 3rd and 4, I tried to do the little pass thing. You run the ball with Saquon, who's getting 8 yards a clip that first series. You probably score a touchdown there. After that series was done, the Falcons make adjustments. I don't know if you thought they were going to make adjustments mid-defensive series, because guess what? They aren't. They made adjustments after that first series, started slowing down the run in that second series, and then you squandered that first blood because you get those scripted plays. And those first 10 plays, when your first series, you're just you're feeling each other out. And those are, if you can get points on that first series before the defense can make any adjustments, that's huge for the end of the game, because you know what? Instead of being up 3-6, you're up another 7 points. That makes it a two-possession game. So people don't really highlight the beginning of the game like that, but that makes all the difference. You do stupid play calling at the wrong time because you want to outsmart your opponent, and it infuriates me. It infuriates his players. Nick Sirianni, you got to go. You got to get off the football field. Let Vic Fangio be the head coach. I don't know, but there are problems in Philadelphia, Dan.
And on that note, let's move into our spotlight tapes of the week. We each have a game, a certain sect of a game that we want to highlight and talk more into detail. I'll give you a break. I'll do mine first. So I picked the Raiders and the Ravens to look at a little bit more closely. It was a good game, but after like good review, I found the holes on both sides, and I know why the Raiders won. It boiled down to the thing that we touched on within the Ravens' first game, which was that offensive line, particularly the right-hand side, the right tackle of that offensive line is not up to snuff. And some of their pass coverages were confusing, to say the least. But I'll start in the Raiders because Raiders got the ball first. They lined up decently. They had a bunch of sets where they were going either four wide or they're looking like it was three wide, quote unquote, but they had Bowers just not lined up in a tight end spot. He's one over and he was just like essentially running routes. So they're essentially just having five down linemen and having four wide, as it were. He was basically playing a Kelsey role just from the bat. So this game really just stayed, oh no, Bowers is a slot more than he is anything else.
That's how he was used in college too. He was the best player in football last year for college.
Yep.
He's just and a freak.
The good thing is that it does look like the offensive coordinator, I actually don't know who the offensive coordinator for the Raiders is.
Old one for the Bears, Luke Getsy, was axed and he tucked his tail to the Las Vegas Raiders.
No, not pretty. And like one of my first notes was like, it was midway through the first quarter, I think third possession. And it was the first time I saw the Raiders do motion in anything. No. Like up until that point, everything was static right off. And they did some motion afterwards. But the only motion was like, they had some really weird blocking schemes. They had an interesting blocking scheme where they pulled the left tackle to the right-hand side and had pass pro left tackle pulls right, Ravens sitting three in the hole with the linebackers holding for flat coverage. Z is open over the linebackers, intermediate post. Minshew backs off the throw, sends it to the running back in the flat, and then Zamir does absolutely nothing whatsoever. And he's immediately tackled and covered up. That is what their offense looked like. A lot of the times where Minshew was given a little bit more time for the play to develop, he could hit Bowers and he hit Adams quite a bit. There's a couple of plays in the first quarter where it was like Trey Tucker sweep passes, which were pretty okay. They didn't really go anywhere. One of them went somewhere, but the first one that they tried didn't go anywhere. But it was fundamentally the offense was running through, and their scripted portion of it was running through Bowers. That was first read on almost everything. They had a tight end screen to Bowers, like scripted in the second corner, which was pretty cool. Love to see it. And the crazy thing on that play was they had tight end screen to the right-hand side. It was read by Hamilton right away. Bowers caught the ball. The ball was improperly thrown, so it was high in the air. Bowers had to come down and did a spin around the immediate tackler and got 9 yards going forward and like just barreled forward. I was like, oh man, this dude is special. That was not an easy play to make. So Minshew is sitting in the pocket multiple times, didn't feel pressure coming from his backhand side. He was mainly turned, and he's a right-handed thrower, so it's naturally that his backside is to his left. So the Ravens naturally sent good pass rushers on the right-hand side and inevitably sacked him multiple times. There was one within the first series, there's a sack fumble. And later in the second quarter, there was a complete missed block by the left tackle. They didn't call slide properly, so they didn't slide left. They just didn't have any pre-snap communication as far as it goes. And granted, the Ravens dropped a really interesting coverage where they had three people stepping up, and then they immediately dropped them out into flat coverage. So it was like a hidden cover three.
and the left tackle just stood there, took no one, and then let the guy come around his left-hand side to the edge and immediately sacked Minshew. It was like, why weren't we sliding? Why did we just let this guy go? There's no one there to block. The running back was in the flat already. There was no one there to stay back and block this. It was interesting to see also that it's like they're running – they're not running similar offenses, but they run through similar players, right? So they have your star wide receiver and your tight end, quote unquote, and both of them are essentially how both these teams get the ball moving. Mm-hmm. And so I'll get to the real point of the game. And we've highlighted this, and I talked about this when we were taking our future bets for Defensive Player of the Year. Max Crosby is a fucking menace. That
first
dude,
death bomb on the show.
Yes, thank you. He is, and you know what? It's well-deserved because Max did some things in this game that were crazy. He was lined up on the right-hand side, left-hand side. He was in center. He had stunts with him. Mm-hmm. And he had pressures and sacks up the wazoo because mm-hmm. they couldn't do anything about it. Multiple times they had Pat Ricard, hey, UMaine alum, Pat Ricard, lined up to take him one-on-one, and that did not work out well for Pat. Max had swim moves on top of swim moves, and the reason they won this game is because whenever they didn't double team, which was like, for some reason, their offensive line game plan wasn't a double team. It was to like just set up 1v1s on everything, and he blew up play after play. There's like multiple within the first two quarters that were just like, yeah, we're not going to play this game. And that was a low blow, but I also thought about that. I also thought about that. May he rest in peace, but his unit is not doing well.
They need you, bud.
They do. They really do. So the reason why the Ravens lost this game is because they had no answer to the defensive prowess of because
their old line coach is dead, Dan. Come on.
They obviously have another old line coach now. I don't know who it is. Yeah, he definitely does not do as well as what they had because the coverages weren't as good and how they were doing their offensive schemes mm-hmm. were just plainly not as good. And I think it just doesn't allow Lamar to do what he's supposed to do. And so I'm afraid for teams that the Ravens play going forward that have that pinnacle D end who can really take a game over by themselves.
Do they play the Steelers at all, Dan?
I think they do. I'm pretty sure. Oh, do they play the Browns at all? Do they play the Bengals, who only has one good defensive player?
Two,
you're right. But one really good defensive player?
Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard. What are they going to do with two good ends?
I don't know. They're going to get booked and
lose.
Wilkinson, right? That's the other D end for the Raiders, if I'm not mistaken. Who bookends with Max Crosby? That's
the thing I well, you got Christian know. Watkins at their D tackle. And then who is their other end? Because it was supposed to be Tyree Wilson, their seventh-round pick last year, but he's hurt. I don't know it off the top of my head. I just know Christian Wilkins and Max Crosby off the dome piece.
All right, I'm looking it up. Give me one second. Because he had a number of really good plays where they were basically crushing from both ends. Mm-hmm. They didn't let them play the game at all.
When the Ravens play good defensive linemen, yeah. They're going to struggle.
Christian Wilkinson.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the two of them in combination did a really good job. And yeah, I don't think Ravens are going to potentially win any games that they cannot allow Lamar to develop anything. Lamar had an amazing throw on a line to Zay Flowers coming over the center. That was probably his best throw that. And that was right before the halftime. And I love that. I love that throw. But yeah, that's my overview. I'm on the Raiders bandwagon a little bit if they fix up that left tackle, if he learns how to play the position a little bit better.
You're not on the bandwagon, Dan. You had them in the playoffs to start. You've been there since the beginning.
Yes, I called this. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying. Give me your spotlight.
My spotlight. I'll try to be quick and precise because I've been rambling too much on this podcast. I've been doing a lot of hating. It's actually my time to love. My spotlight is the Saints offense, Dan. A lot of people in the news have been like, what the hell's going on in Carolina? So I dug deep brought out my magnifying glass, my Sherlock Holmes. Why are the Saints averaging, what, 40 points a game? Why are the Saints the best offense in football? I'm telling you why. Clint Kubiak came to town, gets Gary Kubiak's son. Gary Kubiak was a quarterback once upon a time, and he backed up John Elway. John Elway played for Mike Shanahan, so we got some more Shanahan love, and it's coming to New Orleans, and Derek Carr is not doing bad, and it's because of Clint Kubiak. Clint Kubiak has been doing what every coach should be doing, NFC South cough, putting their players in a position to succeed. And with the Shanahan offense, something that we see all the time with Mike McDaniel down in Miami, they have implemented motion. You've probably been hearing this all over the internet, but motion, look at all the motion that they do with Rashid Shaheed. This is a good binky for Derek Carr. It lets him see the play, if it's in man or if it's in zone. It's a binky that Derek Carr has needed, and it's a binky that makes him not cry and throw interceptions. So Derek Carr has been succeeding because, one, he has a good indicator on what's happening with the play. Second of all, they have Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara has been my MVP of not only the Saints, but of the entire NFL through 2 weeks. He is my MVP, Alvin Kamara. There are not many times when I'm watching running back tape and the running back sees a hole that I don't even see somebody who's watching Bird Eye 20 All-Pro 22 tape. I don't see the hole. There was one play that Alvin scored a touchdown on here. It was probably about on the outside of the red zone for Dallas. And they had this run. They had an outside run, which they're doing a lot. They're doing outside run zones with Kamara, and they're doing inside runs with Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill has been a great blocker. Our good tight end that can block, we're going to put him at fullback, and he's going to block these guys on the outside along with our tackles. Great offensive line play, too. That's something else, but I'll get to that. So Kamara has this outside zone run. There was a cutback lane back to the inside, but Kamara keeps on running. I was like, what are you doing, Alvin? And he just keeps on running. He keeps on running, and he creates his own hole at probably not the 7 or the 9 hole, but probably like the 11 or 13 hole, holes that don't even really exist. He just took it all the way to the outside and house called it. They had another screenplay. They used the motion because they love motion. He saw that it was man. He then redirected it backwards screenplay to Kamara, who then cuts back. That was the big house call play for probably, it was like a 50-yard screen and run for Kamara. And just the offensive line for the Saints is no joke. It's really, after last season, where it was, I don't want to say dog shit, but it was underperforming for Saints standards. They usually have a pretty good offensive line. The offensive line this year is pretty phenomenal. I think they had two guys, if you want to go look up all the PFF scores, two guys ranking in the top five. I think it's Patrick and their left guard. Their offensive line's been really good. And offensive lines like zone schemes, which is what's been implemented here, zone schemes. And not only that, they have Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave, who are two good receivers. But not only are they good receivers, they're good zone-breaking receivers. So when they're seeing with the motion, if it's man or cover two, Carr knows right away where I can go with the football. The speed of the game in the NFL is unimaginable to me, and it's something that we as average fans don't really comprehend, and it's hard for us to comprehend as we sit on our couches. But the speed is so instantaneously that you pretty much have to predict your movements before they actually happen. And for Derek Carr to be able to have that motion where he knows where to go, it's like knowing, like Spygate, we know your defensive plays. Really, it gives you that much of an advantage because the game is that fast that you have to know it's bang. And Derek Carr, he knows zone. I'm going to Shaheed because he's my zone breaker. Man, Olave or Shaheed, who's ever on the go route, we're going to try and house call it here. I can go to my backers, whatever, with the zone. I got the best zone breaking running back in the game, and Alvin Kamara. I'm going to do a dump off pass to him. Kamara has probably 300 yards of offense so far through 2 weeks. It's been incredible. I think if they played a team that does man-to-man defense and loves to blitz, that's the way to break them because it will break the feng shui of that offensive line. Teams that love playing cover two zones, which is the NFL nowadays, are really going to struggle. So I like the Saints team. I like the NFC South outside of the Carolina Panthers because there's three teams now that are competitive that have a little fight in them. We saw it in Atlanta. They didn't quit and roll over. They fought back and they came back, and Cousins looks like he's getting better with the Achilles. So by the middle of the season, we're hoping that he's back to regular form. The NFC South was put in the graveyard. Guess what? They're out of the graveyard, and they're here to play some football because I like all three of those teams.
And guess who they play next week?
Philadelphia.
In New Orleans.
It's a fun place to play when jobs on the line, Nick.
Welcome to the Thunderdome. They had an injury in the back end too, as the Eagles, and they had Cooper DeJean to have to step in for that last from the Monday night game. I have a sneaking suspicion that the Saints may be able to do another one, but I've also seen Derek Carr put back-to-back performances in that were like incredible, and then put a dud in on the third one. So I'm not buying in quite yet. I'm eating shit because I did not think the Saints. I think Saints were going to be the worst team in the potentially worse in the division. So I am thoroughly impressed at what Clint Kubiak has done for Dennis Allen's job, to say the least.
It was consensus though. They were a 7-10 below that, like one of the worst teams. And everybody's eating crow. They have a good veteran-led defense. Cam Jordan, Honey Badger. Lattimore's kind of banged up, but they got a first rounder in Kool-Aid McKinstry, one of the best names in football, out of Bama. DeMario Davis. They just have veterans on the defensive side along with the new birthed offense. They're fun to watch. And also, I was watching the Cowboys. They weren't putting together too much of an effort on defense either. So put the two together, it ain't good.
Yeah, no, it's not good at all. All right.
Ass kicked.
Let's move right to our players of interest. We had some tirades that we had to get into.
My fault. Hand up.
No, that's okay. It's a team effort. So I'll do mine. Just a quick overview. Braylon Allen being able to play for the Jets and doing like a bang up job, especially on that touchdown. It was so funny to hear the post game where I guess Aaron Rodgers was asking specifically for two RB sets. Like, he's like, why are we not doing this? And Hackett was like, no. And he was like, no, I want this. And so they used it once and they threw it a Breeze and it was a bang up play. And so this was the second time that they used it during the game. And of course they used it as a misdirection so Braylon Allen could get that touchdown. I thought it looked really good in his limited action. So you have piqued my interest, Braylon Allen.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I was looking at was, Green Bay always used two running backs. It's Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett. They come over here. They draft a kid in what, the third round. They're probably going to use two running backs. It looks like they're using two running backs. Braylon Allen pretty much went for free in drafts. That second running back position probably good for 750 combined yards. That's good for your RB4 or 5 where he was getting drafted, if that. Yeah, Braylon Allen's just – he's a good player. He's a young player. He runs hard. He's just – he's someone I'm interested in a lot.
Give me yours.
All right, mine. I talked about him at the beginning of the year. It's come to fruition so far, so good. It's J.K. Dobbins with the Harbaugh man who loves running the football. And J.K. is just, I think he leads the league in running for the first 2 weeks. The thing with J.K. is that he's not looking good on his runs, but he's making explosive runs, which is what we want to see when he's coming off an Achilles, ACL, and all that fun stuff. So J.K. is breaking off runs. He's been over, I think, 120 yards both games, and he's scoring touchdowns. And it's just that Chargers team with Greg Roman's going to want to run the football. Greg Roman's always top 5 in rushing. J.K. Dobbins, please stay healthy because we've been waiting for this for a while, and it's just really fun to see. J.K. Dobbins, way to go. Hats off.
And with that, we'll do our brief look-see because this is just our timing for when we record. So we'll look towards the week 3 with the beginning on Thursday night. We are New England. Our home has always been New England, so the Patriots have always been on our radar. Patriots at MetLife with the Jets. My first impression of this game is one that I'm not super thrilled and interested in seeing. I imagine it's going to be another dogfight, and I'm not super interested in this game, I'll be quite honest. But I think the Jets are probably going to take this one.
Oh, all yeah, right. And you're not interested in Jets-Patriots.
Yeah, no, I can't hear your sarcasm. All right, give me your thoughts.
Divisional matchup here, Thursday Night Football. We love to see it. First week, second week, the Jets played two pretty good defenses. They struggled against both of them. Last week, what we were seeing with Tennessee, we're talking on the show, one of the games that we predicted right, even though we got a lot wrong. All the big upsets, we were pretty much on the other side. And the Jets have trouble stopping the run. They have trouble against good defensive fronts. And if you have one good cornerback, they can take away Garrett Wilson, and Mike Williams isn't back yet. Alan Lazard isn't in yet. And the Rodgers experiment is still, now that they've implemented two running backs, it's a little bit more interesting. That's a nice little facet of the offense. I don't see how the Patriots don't cover plus +7. That's way too big of a line, especially since the Patriots love to run the football. They're going to funnel the ball with Ramondre Stevenson. That Jets defense is making me get a little worried. Hassan Reddick still doesn't want to play football. He's given up $6 million now. Way to go, Hassan Reddick. Jermaine Johnson tore his Achilles last week. It's getting scary in New York. And Sauce Gardner might be taken out of this game just because the Patriots do not pass the ball. They run the ball, and you've been having trouble with your run defense. And on the other side, we got Christian Gonzalez, and guess what? He can play cover on your guy, Garrett Wilson. So the recipe for the Patriots to pull the upset is here. I don't think they pull the upset because it's in New Jersey, because the New York Jets play in New Jersey. And I think Rodgers is just a little bit better than Brissett. But Rodgers and Brissett both lead the NFL in turnover rate right now, in interception rates. And they're both not turning the football over, and both their teams are playing good defense. I'm intrigued by the matchup. I think Patriots plus +7 is close to a lock. I might lock it in there.
I was thinking like 3.5. So yeah, I agree with you. Pats are not a 7-point worse team.
That's right, man. It's a disrespectful line. And the Pats have been showing out these first 2 weeks. I just think they're like playing for Mayo. And the sociology of the Pats are on the up. And the Eagles and the Panthers should take note. What the Patriots are doing this year is what the bad teams in the NFL should be looking at and basing your organization on, because I'm happy the way they're doing it this time with a new young quarterback. It's the right way to do it, and it's going to lead to success. Go ahead, Dan.
No, completely agree. I think it's the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes approach of previous. You sit your rookie quarterback, let them absorb a year on the bench, maybe spot play if necessary, but nothing more than that. And so I think Mayo is stepping into, we think, a decent, and they took the Seahawks to the line there. Like, it wasn't it wasn't an easy game. I think they won by 3 points. Like, it was as tight as you could expect. So I'm
Patriots playing, would have won the game, but they got a field goal blocked from 48 yards out.
Yep. And so that's telling. That's a good thing. We like to see that, because if they're going into this, I think it's closer than 7 points.
It'll be a dogfight.
Right. Okay, you piqued my interest about this game.
Hang on.
Any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. No, not really. I've said my piece. I made this run long.
No, you did great. And on that note, we will call for today. Again, I'm Dan at FFRichKid on Twitter, and this is Hippo at Hippo_ball on Twitter. Feel free to give us a follow, and we'll talk to you in a couple days.
Peace out.